Do you want to see your satellite, the moon? Can you see it from here? Naturally. If we had more time, I would show you other planets as well. He turned the telescope towards the moon. I thought, if I could see some more planets like Akkart, I would be happy. But even with the view of the moon, I would be satisfied, because from the ground you could not see it as well as from here. A proverb came to mind, he who likes it at home, does not look up to the moon. Nevertheless, I was looking forward to seeing it. Akok said, I think I have a good attitude now. I took my place. The surprise I felt was quite different than the sight of the Earth. There was almost nothing, and I had to look closely to see a dark sphere and a band of brightness as seen a few days before new moon from Earth. I was very surprised that there was a kind of vapor or smoke on this bright part. What is going up there? Look. I released my seat for him. He looked in and laughed. That's nothing. That's what it looks like when it's closest to the sun. When is it closest to the sun? Whenever you have new moon on Earth. But that's not the new moon phase. A part of it is still bright. Yes. He paused for a moment and replied, today is the new moon on Earth. Why do I still see a bright sickle? Everything looks a bit different from here than from the Earth, and I can tell you that if you wanted to judge the moon from here by its brightness, you'd never see the full moon phase here. I thought, these people here know more about the Earth than we do ourselves. To destroy my last doubt, I asked, what's the date on Earth and the time? He looked at me in amazement and laughed, this time rightly so, because I had put the question wrong. Of course I mean in my native country, from where I was taken from. He thought for a moment and answered, today is May 10th in your home country, and it's about 3 PM in the afternoon. They really know everything, I thought a bit ashamed. Let's go now, it's almost time for the next meal. When we started to descend, it occurred to me that I had not yet heard what the two pipes were for. What are the pipes for? To prevent any attacks. Who should attack here? The Earthlings? No, right now we do not fear this, but it does so happen that there are other planets that are just as advanced in their evolution as us. Is that even possible? Yes, it is. That's why we've built such observatories all over Akkart, 1,500 kilometers away, and each of them is equipped with two neutralizers. Are these tubes the neutralizers you've talked about? Yes, we keep watching Spooky. If something suspicious approaches, these neutralizers will be put into action all over Akkart. Do not the Akkartians die if they neutralize all the oxygen in the air? No, they only neutralize the area they are targeting. We never set them up against the ground, but into space. Okay, I understand that more or less. We said goodbye to the guards and went to the place where we had our previous meal. When we arrived, we had to show the passes again. I wanted to ask why it was always necessary to do that, but I did not do it because I was very confused and tired. Maybe he would have given me a lot of explanations for that, but I was no longer capable of conversing. We ate in silence. He had certainly noticed that I was tired. As always, I ate little. There were only two or three dishes I could eat, and had to eat to avoid starvation. After lunch, we left and I asked where we were going now. I would have preferred to have said, to your home, because I could have slept there if he did not yet have anything new in mind. As I thought about the long night, I decided to mull over my experiences point by point that night. Let go home, returning by way of Tanyug, where is that? I asked, yawning. Do not you remember from where we departed from this morning? But, is the city you live in, Tanyug then? I did not know that, because you always talked about your hometown or the capital. Yes, you are right. He admitted. 16. The rivers and fish farms. After flying for about 15 minutes, I saw a river below that flowed in our direction of flight. I could not understand that this river was at one section very narrow and then much wider, and I asked him about it. Akok slowed down, dropped lower and answered, these are commercial enterprises, one after the other. Why TMS that? Probably for irrigation, because there are no factories here. Yes, partly they are used for irrigation, but their almost exclusive purpose is fish farming. All rivers on Akkad are managed in this way. It also prevents flooding. Who owns these reservoirs? The government or private companies? They belong to the government and at the same time to the people. Why is the fish breeding here so promoted? Because more than 10% of our food is fish. Do you like fish so much here? Yes, but it's also a food that costs almost nothing. I thought, cheap. But at the expense of the many reservoirs. The advantage is that the fish farms are laid out where we can't plant anything else. 17. The next night and the next morning. I was so exhausted that I hardly cared. I asked nothing more, because I was desperate for rest. I leaned back in my seat and immediately fell asleep. He probably understood my condition, because he did not wake me up. I woke up when the machine landed in front of his apartment. He touched my shoulder and woke me up. After the short nap, I felt a little better. Before we entered, I looked at the sun. It was already very low. I very much hoped that he would ask me to go and sit in my room. His wife and son were waiting for us. They went into the back of the room, and I thought, thank God, just a few more moments and I can sleep. At that moment, he turned to me, and I asked him, if you do not mind, I would like to go to sleep now. But first we want to eat something. Thanks a lot, but I have no appetite. But I can give you something to drink? I should soon see what that was. He handed me a glass with a dark liquid. I took a sip mechanically and felt refreshed. He accompanied me to my room, wished me good night and retired. I went to bed and immediately fell asleep. In the middle of the night I woke up and was very thirsty. I drank some water and immediately fell asleep again. When I woke up later, I was a little sad. I thought it would be day soon. So I got dressed, went to the other room and looked out the front window. It was still very dark outside. Since there was no point in wandering around the room longer and I could not sleep anymore, I put on my outer clothing and went out onto the terrace. Despite the coat, I felt very cold. But the beauty of the city made me forget the cold. Already on the horizon you could see the first rays of sunshine. I hardly believed that there was anything more glorious than this city at daybreak. I thought, if I were allowed to take a picture of this colorful city and I could show it on Earth, I might be able to prevent a nuclear war. I was so lost in the sight that I hardly noticed when Akok stepped behind me and greeted me. Good morning. Did you sleep well? Yes, thank you, all night. Did it not seem so long to you this time? Yes, but my fatigue was very great. Have you been up long? I got up when it was still dark, and then looked at the city. That's almost 2/10. About an hour and a half, maybe. I didn't even notice time passing. I was so fascinated by your city. 18. Rest by the sea. Do you want to fly around today? My heart beats faster. Will they bring me back to Earth today? I asked. Where to? To a seaside resort. That answer seemed like a bucket of cold water to my anticipation of the return flight to Earth. Yes, gladly, I replied, head bowed. Since the Son of the Sun has commissioned me to accompany you, we can go somewhere instead of just staying at home. What kind of city is that, and why do you call it a resort? Well, we're going there and you'll soon see for yourself. It is a place where for rest and leisure. We will fly there shortly. Afterwards, I still have much more to explain to you, and we can exchange thoughts about the Earth and Akkad. We went into the room to have our first meal. Akok packed a suitcase of medium size and we said goodbye to his family. On the way, we flew over several cities. Every time I thought, well, we're probably at our destination, but I was wrong every time. There was no sea in sight. Akok said, look. I looked ahead. Far away you could see the sea. When we got closer, I asked, what wall is it that leads along the coast and alongside the houses? It's not a wall, it's a building. I looked at it more closely now and saw that it was a building. We were already flying over this city and landed on this long building, which was not very wide, maybe 100 meters, and had 5 to 6 floors, but its length I estimated as 20 kilometers. It was built along the curves of the beach and it was about 500 meters from the sea. The town was on the other side with tightly packed small seeming houses. I do not know if that was true, or perhaps they seemed so small compared to the giant house built around other tall buildings. There were already several ships on the roof, and still more arriving. I saw that only a few arriving craft did not TMT land on this roof. They went down into the city. Acock picked up the suitcase and said, "It's still very early, we can walk up here a bit to see the city and the beach." At first we looked at the city from one side and the beach from the other. Despite the early hours of the day and the altitude, it was not cold, with a pleasant breeze. It was the warmest place I had encountered so far on Akkad. Slowly we walked about 2 kilometers, then we hit an opening that led downhill. I asked, "But how will you find your ship again among so many others?" "It's very simple. You see these squares on the ground, each are numbered."
"Oh.
But there is no danger of your ship being stolen?
Nobody steals anything here.
Why are the people here so rich?"
"Not only does this refer to this area here, but to all of Akkad. We have other laws than those on Earth, and I'll explain it to you later."
We descended in an elevator. Downstairs we entered an office where Acock showed a man the pass. He read it and gave it back with a smile. He gave Acock two little cards. They talked briefly. The man looked at me critically and I stopped breathing. He turned back to Acock. After a few short words, Acock and I left the room. The man escorted us to the door and watched leave. We went through a dining room with about 1,000 tables and left it on the other side. This meant a walk of about 100 meters through this dining room. It was so big. After this hall we reached another, which ended in a corridor. Across this corridor were rooms, bathrooms, toilets, etc. Acock opened a door, and now I could see that these were dressing rooms. Each room could hold about 100 people. Along the walls were lockers for clothes. Each of these rooms had its RTMS own toilet. Acock put down the suitcase. I saw he had a bottle with him. As we stepped into the corridor, I saw two women emerge from a room across the hallway. I assumed that the other side was reserved for women. Acock gave me one of the passes as we continued along the corridor and said, "Keep it safe, each of us needs one." I did not ask about it, because I knew what it was for. So we walked side by side for about 80 meters, always along the building. I looked at everything on the way. 10 meters from the building stood two rows of trees. The trees themselves were also about 10 meters apart and were quite thick. These rows of trees led along the whole building. Everywhere under the trees stood benches of all kinds. There were also hammocks stretched between the trees piled up with pillows. From the trees to the sea was a sandy beach. This place was like a paradise. The first floor of the building contained only dining rooms, cafes and changing rooms. I assumed the rooms and dorms were on the other floors. We went to one of these cafes and sat down. Acock ordered a drink from one of the waiters. He went out to a balcony that reached from one side to the other and soon came back with two glasses that seemed to contain water. Acock opened the bottle he had brought with him and poured something into each glass. He handed me one of the glasses.
"What did you pour in?"
I asked.
"It's water with."
I did not understand the word. "That's what my wife makes at home." I took a sip. It tasted very good, slightly sweet. We drank two more glasses and left, then wandered around until it was time for our second meal in one of the dining rooms with many other people together.
19. The planet without money.
After dinner, we went outside again and sat comfortably on one of the benches that had backrests like rocking chairs. I crossed my hands behind my head and rested for a few minutes. As I pondered, many things went through my mind that Acock had not yet explained to me. I straightened up to ask a few questions to Acock. The first thing that came to my mind was the fact that I had never seen anyone pay on Akkad. Thousands of guests had eaten in the dining room, but none of them had paid. For some occasions I had an explanation for us. It was the note that Acock had received from the government. But the other Poeopol? To rule out any doubt, I asked, "What's the money here?"
He also straightened up and answered, "Money? There is no money on Eckhart." I almost fell off the bench. "Really? How do you shop here and how are the employees paid?" He sighed softly and said, "That's a pretty long story, but I'll try to explain it to you. I think I've already told you that Eckhart used to be divided into different countries, each with its own government and currency. However, when the problem of overpopulation began, the wealthy began buying and controlling every meter of ground, and as they could buy more land than they needed for themselves, the poorer ones would just have to sit more or less on the street. There followed several wars, there was theft, speculation, etc. And why? Always because of money. The whole planet was like hell. Some became very rich, but the vast majority suffered and many died of starvation, in misery and privation. When everything seemed lost, the greatest scientist of all time emerged on Eckhart. And what did he do? He discovered the technique of exploiting solar energy. And what did that have to do with money? Very much. When the solar energy was discovered, he and two of his followers invented the weapons we possess today. Was he poor or rich? Very rich, but he put all his wealth into research for the benefit of the people. How did he do that? In the following way: when he invented the neutralizer, he did not conceal this invention, but he provided complete proof of what he could do with this weapon. He threatened the unruly population he attempted to use this weapon if they did not find a common denominator for their differences. To save the planet, he presented a global plan. Then almost everyone obeyed him. His first step was to abolish the borders and unify all the peoples of Eckhart. Then he created equal rights and duties for all citizens. And this plan ended the monetary system. This automatically stopped scams, speculation, robberies and the like, because all this was only committed because of the money. So he was a dictator? No, he was not the head of the government. But almost all ideas emanated from him and were then practiced by the others. But surely he had the protection and support of the whole Eckhartian country? No, because as I said, 90% of the population lived in misery. They understood his thoughts and supported him. The other 10% could do nothing about it and finally gave in. When the people helped him to establish this regime, he was also given the right to elect his own government, and he was proposed as a leader, but he did not accept that office but suggested one of his sons. Hai Sun was duly appointed as the first leader of all Eckhart, and as his father was called the Sun's Man because of his invention, the new leader was now called the Son of the Sun, hence the traditional name for our leaders. Aha, now I understand that name. At first I thought it was a sacred name. No, it is not, as you can see. For what period of time is the leader elected? For 3 Eckhartian years. How do you go about purchasing and selling without means of payment? Nobody needs to buy or sell here, it is enough if you work. Everyone does what work he wants. He can get everything he needs and wants, with the exception of immoral things. Squeezing out of work is a crime here. We have come to the conclusion that money is the work of evil. If there is none, many evils can be avoided. Do you have to work here until old age? No. During the day you work so many hours, the night is for rest and relaxation, and everyone can do what they want. You can go to restaurants, eat there and drink, but without extravagance. Every year there is a vacation time. During this time you can travel all over Eckhart and see what you want. You can also use any vehicle. All you need is a certificate from the government. What one citizen has, they all have. Here everything is subject to a uniform plan: houses, means of transport, clothes, food, etc. To what age do you have to work? This is the way it is. The first 11 Eckhartian years are for study and learning. After that, you go to work at which you have an aptitude for and the training for. You work 36 Eckhart years, then you sit down to rest. The last few years you can spend as you like. You can have a permanent residence or travel from one hotel to another. Any reward and support you have earned for your retirement is certain. Does this law apply to women? Yes, the women also study for 11 years. If they marry, then they will get their household, If they stay single, they must practice their learned profession. 20. A very serious conversation. All day we spent talking about everything. We took the respective meals, and Ake or Quentin between an hour into the sea for swimming. I do not want to tell everything that we talked about, because just what he told me that day would make a whole book. He explained a lot to me, the individual obligations, the jurisdiction, the election of the government and the councillors. When I praised this regime and the way of life on Akkad, he sighed deeply and continued, "Yes, but we still have a very big problem that gets bigger every day." "Which one?" "That overpopulation. So far it has not been resolved, though we use drastic measures of every kind that our religious attitude does not allow us to do. Is there no solution? Maybe in the distant future." "What solution is that?" "It would be necessary to bring some of the population to a less populated planet." As if to protect our own planet, I involuntarily suggested, "How about our moon? On Earth, we are sure it is not inhabited. Of course we know that too, but no life thrives on your terrestrial satellite, and the daily change of heat and cold is unbearable. Which planet do you think of?" He made a worrisome face, pinched his lips, and finally answered, "I am very uncomfortable having to tell you this, but at the request of the Sun I must do it." Before he could continue, I cut him off and asked, "Do the Akkadians think about an invasion on Earth?" "That's not the right term, but we've actually thought that Earth could help us solve the problem." I felt very cold, and I was silent for a moment. I thought, if this people is going to do that, then with these spaceships and weapons, it will be easy for them to destroy us in a few hours. But then what should we Earthlings do? I asked, stuttering. "Before we talk about it, let me tell you that we do not mean anything wrong, for the evil that happens on Earth, the human being of the Earth alone is responsible." "Why?" "Now comes the most distressing thing I have to say about this problem," Akok said in a sad voice, then continued with some interruptions, "I have already told you that we have been flying to Earth for a long time. We have researched everything what is there, cities, deserts, countries, seas, all zones, etc. We also know that there are many uninhabited areas in your country, so many that we had already made the plan to land by force on the Earth, but we also know that this would result in an unnecessary mass murder, and our religious sentiment and great humanity would not allow us to do that. But on our research journeys on Earth we have discovered something that will be of great benefit to us in the future could be."
"What is this?"
"We are up to date on everything that happens on Earth. You can count on what I am telling you now. We know which peoples are enemies of each other. We have discovered that man has developed a weapon that was in use on Akkad for a while, and with which we killed each other. By chance, we have discovered in good time that what once was a danger is of value to us today in agriculture and many other things. You speak of nuclear energy and nuclear bombs? How can something like this be of use to you? What good could come of this energy? It is well known here that there are two or more major powers on Earth fighting each other. These major powers possess many nuclear weapons with a high destructive power, and we also know that if you were to use nuclear energy on Earth for constructive and non-destructive purposes, our hopes would be zero."
"What hopes?"
"Settling or inhabiting the Earth."
"Are you saying that you intend to invade Earth?"
"I told you earlier that this is not the right expression. I want to explain to you what we are up to. You must have understood that an atomic war on Earth would have unimaginable consequences, and if we wanted to instigate such a war, we could do so easily, intercept a military aircraft or ship that belongs to either of these nuclear powers. Nobody would know what would have happened. And yet we will not interfere in the affairs of the Earth in any way, for we believe that human curiosity cannot stand it much longer anymore. Now you know what those weapons can do, and if that happens, you yourself will not escape death, because you can easily contaminate the whole Earth with a few atomic bombs. If that were the case, we would be able to calmly seize the Earth, because the few survivors could no longer resist. On the contrary, they would welcome us. But what use would a contaminated soil destroyed by radioactivity benefit you?
Such contamination would not be a problem for us. Why not? We have a machine that neutralizes the noxious effects of radioactivity and at the same time makes the soil fertile and wholesome to living beings. If it really came to a nuclear war with us, when would you intervene? Once the war was over, we would go into action, because if we delayed too long, the vegetation in the affected areas would die. But if, after such a war, there would be a victor who would not lose either man or material, after such a war, there is no winner. We are sure that they will attack each other. We know all about the people of the Earth, while they know practically nothing about us. But when I return to Earth and I tell everyone what I've seen and heard here, that changes nothing. I agree with you when you say that no one will believe you. What was the reason why the Son of the Sun and the counselors first thought it was dangerous for them when I returned to Earth, but then said that I should tell everything that I have seen, heard and felt and should make sure that the thing circulates? Was this all just a means of testing my loyalty? No, that was not the reason. We have an interest in the inhabitants of the Earth hearing and reading your narrative, even if, at this time, nobody will believe it. Why, right now? Because they will only believe it, if some of these facts are confirmed. How and when can you benefit then? The moment this war takes place and we land on Earth, the few survivors will then, through your mediation, become acquainted with our way of governing and living and not resist, which incidentally, would be pointless to even try. I asked a somewhat aggressive question, so you are saying that you would come as lords of the Earth and not as friends, is not it? I have repeatedly told you that we are not coming to harm you. But if you have caused misfortune with your own hands, it is logical that we will benefit from it. We Akashans are realists for a good reason. These questions can be compared to a fable that my father often told me when I was little. A.T.M.L.L. tell it to you. A man who owned many bird cages wanted to fill them with songbirds. He had caught two couples and put them in two cages next to each other. In one of these cages the birds multiplied so much that they had almost no space left. But they lived quite well and were satisfied with the place they had to live. They thought, if God lets you be born, he will also provide for life. In the second cage, however, there was still plenty of space. The strongest lived comfortably, the weak retreated to the corners and contented themselves with the crumbs. For the strong, however, stupidity and ambition did not cease. Everyone wanted to be the greatest and to rule. Finally, a terrible fight ensued. They killed each other, and the weak could only watch and not interfere. When the Lord saw this, the birds in the other cage got wings so that part of them could move to the other half-empty cage. When they were there, they rebuilt the ruined nests, took care of those who had managed to survive, and from then onwards lived many years in peace and quiet, without worrying about the problem of space, as many in one cage as the other. I understand the moral of this story, which would be unhappy for Earthlings should something like this happen. It's a comparison between Akkart and Earth. I said, head down, and after a moment's silence, I asked, did not you make a mistake showing your spaceships and weapons to me? When I'm back on Earth, I could try to make those two you have explained so much. If I found a government that would provide me with the appropriate resources, there could be a different outcome. He swallowed hard and had trouble answering me. After a moment's thought, he said, first of all, I do not think you would do that, and secondly, people on Earth do not have the materials to do it. Please, but never say such a thing to me again, because if someone distrusts you here, you could find yourself living on Akkart until the end of your days. But I will not tell anyone because I do not think you are capable of such behavior. Now I realize exactly where my stupid thoughts had brought me. I also know that I would never be able to do that. It was just silly talk. I believe you, but never let such a thing be mentioned in the hearing of the Son of the Sun or the counselors. He had calmed down again and sat thoughtfully with his hands folded. I just wanted to ask him something, but at the last moment kept the question back, as I thought it unnecessary. I actually wanted to ask what would happen if Earth's people had disintegrators, neutralizers, sunships, and all the energy for it. The answer was logical.